Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, September 22nd, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you today by This Week in Google, purveyors of the No Tweet Left Behind policy. Watch it with Leo Laporte, Gina Trapani, and Jeff Jarvis, and guests every Wednesday at live.twit.tv. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Becky Worley.
And behind the boards are excellent producer Eric Lanigan.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Doing good. This is the show where we kick around the tech news of the day, try to make some sense out of it, and it looks like file sharing is finally going to make it to the Supreme Court.
It's kind of unbelievable it hasn't been there before.
Supreme Court's very picky.
Apparently.
They reject almost everything that gets put before them. And they're just like, no, you figure it out.
Now, there are two ways to cover Supreme Court stories, Tom. One is Nina Totenberg from NPR doing a play-by-play. But I'm actually going to do it the TWiT way. Can you put up that photo of the cheerleader?
A Texas federal judge who, after concluding the youngster wasn't an innocent infringer, ordered defendant Whitney Harper to pay $7,400 or $200 per
Nina,
song.
Stop. This is our infringer, a super cute, with braces, long blonde hair, in the cheerleader outfit, Texas teen, Whitney Harper, who has supposedly downloaded songs? What? From the LimeWire?
She is among 20,000 individuals that the RIA sued for file sharing music, but I can't. 37 songs.
Okay.
37 songs. And they decided that she was an innocent infringer, that she couldn't have known that it was against copyright law.
This is what the appeals court said.
Well, no, this is what the federal judge said.
Okay.
And so he gave her the decision of $200 per song. Then they took it to it, and then they appealed. And the appeals court reversed that decision and said, no, the CD had a copyright warning on it. So when she shared those songs, she should have read the CD. And they brought it back up to the minimum $750 a track. That makes it $27,750. So they are appealing to the Supreme Court. And the justices are deciding without comment to ask for more information from the RIAA before they decide whether to review the case or not.
So normally they take about 1% of the cases that are sent to them. And if they ask for more information, if they want a brief, then it ups the chances of the case actually being heard to 34%. And so in this case, by asking for more information, it looks like the RIAA and Whitney, whoop, whoop, will have their day in court. And
well, they've got a one-third chance of having their day in court.
Right, and Whitney has apparently become enemy of the state to the RIAA. They think that her legal wranglings have become, what's the word they used? It wasn't noxious, but it was like she's a...
Vexatious.
Vexatious, thank you. Thank you, yes.
I love that. She's
Let's
a vexatious
see the vexatious for face of crime again.
Yeah.
This Ooh. Is the face of infringement in the United States, ladies and gentlemen. Look on it well and beware. It could be your neighbor next.
I'm shivering in my chair. It is a funny case. But this will be certainly one that gets a lot of media attention, if not just for the archetypes of the players involved. But it is the first file-sharing case. And as you mentioned, 20,000 people who have cases out there, this could be a precedent setter.
Well, yeah, the innocent infringer thing would be what they would latch on to. And that's what they're asking the RIA to respond to. They're asking the RIA specifically, like, what do you think of this? And depending on what the RIA says, we'll decide whether the Supreme Court's thinks there is a reason to hear this case, a reason to rule on it. And they're very careful with setting precedents because everything the Supreme Court does then becomes like lockdown for all those other 20,000 cases.
Okay, I want to ask you something very specific to this. So if the CD has already a warning that says that there's an infringement of copyright that could occur, how do you compare that as you look at the precedent to buying something off of iTunes where it's song by song? Or is there any other way that she could justify that she didn't get it from a CD?
Well, yeah, I don't know.
Granted, it would have had copy protection.
Now we're showing our ignorance of the case because we don't know. Maybe all 37 songs came from a CD, and that's a well-established fact. That very well could be. I think they probably worked through that part of the argument already. But just for hypothetical sake, there is an iTunes copyright notice, so I don't know if it would change anything. In fact, it might make it worse.
And it does. Of course, it would have copy protection built into it, and she would have had to circumnavigate that. But
way back then, it might have. It doesn't anymore, though.
Right. But in the day, it definitely would have. So, I mean, I'm trying to think, is there anything that they could be playing that where, okay, this is a case of analog versus digital?
I think the CD makes for a more interesting case because the copyright notice is over there, not in here. With iTunes, the copyright notice is in the software you're using to purchase.
Well, you click
download.
The EULA.
Yeah. So.
So nice try, but really we got fixated on the cheerleader, and we'll let the Supreme Court decide.
Hopefully they won't be vexated by her wily looks that obviously have defrauded the RIAA of millions of dollars. Once again, folks, the face of crime.
Dun-dun-dun.
Mark Zuckerberg has interviewed with TechCrunch today about that old Facebook phone story.
I did not have relations with any hardware.
I did not build that phone.
Michael Arrington went in and said, okay, all right, fine. You're saying we got it wrong. You're not building a phone. Well, tell us what is going on.
Essentially, the interview seems like a very long, drawn-out version of the press statement from Monday. But the part I liked, Arrington asks Zuckerberg, is another way of saying that the goal will never be to go head-on against the iPhone and Android in their business. Zuckerberg says, yeah. I mean, I think we're trying to do something pretty different. I think those are both. iPhone is clearly a vertical strategy. Android's a bit more horizontal, although they're focusing on specific things now, too. I mean, like, the Droid is vertical. Android, I think, is horizontal. Ours is definitely more a horizontal platform. Our goal is to have Facebook be everywhere and everything be social rather than a specific device. That gives you a bit of the flavor of the interview. But the first thing, he's like, yeah, I think we're trying to do something pretty different. That's, yes. What they're saying very carefully in many, many words is, we're not going to build a phone. We're not even going to build an operating system at this point. But everything else, all bets are off. We want to integrate Facebook in as many places as possible. And if that means branding, well, maybe. He wouldn't be pinned down yes or no on that. If that means having apps that are integrated more deeply into an operating system like Android, sure. Why not?
Or what about placement? You know, as we saw them infiltrate the web with the like button that lives independently on websites, what's to say that they couldn't create APIs that go into other apps at a more integrated level and create a strategy that works across lots of different parts of your phone, or obviously built into the dialer where it connects with your Facebook? If we ever see the APIs for the iPhone FaceTime, maybe they would build into that somehow. I mean, there are lots of different ways that this could really be implemented.
I don't think this interview adds anything to the discussion other than to say Zuckerberg seems to be re-emphasizing what they said on Monday, which is we're doing a lot of things. We're not going to build a phone. And he clarified we're not going to make an operating system.
And I also think that by talking so much about vertical strategy, horizontal strategy, that he is in the third semester of his University of Phoenix business degree. That's what I'm saying.
Is that for real? All right.
Sucka.
Zone alarm caught using fake antivirus scare tactics. The headline on Ars Technica. Some users of the Zone Alarm firewall software, which I used to swear by in the day, got a nasty global virus alert. Your PC may be in danger. Risk is high from the Zeus ZBot threat. It's a new Trojan virus that steals banking passwords and financial account data. Your Zone Alarm free firewall provides basic protection, but this new threat requires additional security. So get protection or see threat details by clicking these buttons that will then take you to our site where you can buy things from us.
Okay, marketing department's gone wild. So basically what happened here is somebody said we need to get a little bit more aggressive about getting the word out about upgrading to the paid version or the more paid version. And they convinced the makers of what has traditionally been a very good firewall to put in some real scareware.
Well, I think what Zone Alarm's running into is that the software firewall is not nearly as essential as it used to be. Windows has a built-in firewall. OS X has a built-in firewall. many more people have home routers that have firewalls built into them. They're feeling the pinch, so they're looking for ways to get people to move over to their antivirus.
Yep.
Because antivirus is where the bucks are.
Yep. And I called the folks at Zone Alarm to say, what the hell were you thinking? They pulled it down pretty quickly, and they basically said it was never our intention to scare people or imply that they had the virus.
Yes.
And they said once they got the unhappy feedback, they pulled it down. So, I mean,
I don't think it was ever their intention to make people think they had the virus. It was definitely their intention to shock them. Maybe not scare them, but come on. Global virus alert with a big red triangle with an exclamation point in the middle of it.
Tom, quoting from their blog, this was purely an informative message about a legitimate and serious virus, and it included information about the differences in the various products' protection levels.
Yeah, well, why suddenly this one?
Okay, your point is well taken.
Yeah, this is not an antivirus program. Why is it suddenly telling me about viruses out of the blue? Bad idea, poorly implemented. At least they've pulled it back and said,
mea culpa, mea culpa.
By the way, Microsoft Security Essentials now free for small businesses.
I am just shocked. We're going to get to more Microsoft news, but Microsoft is for the win on some of these security issues these days.
It's the kinder, gentler Microsoft's been around for a few years now. And what they're doing here is saying, look, if you have 10 PCs or fewer in your place of business, you can use MSE for free. You don't need a license. Because it's too they say it's too complicated and hard to use for those organizations on an enterprise level. Right. And above 10, then it's worth the effort and we'll make you pay.
Right.
So it's complicated and hard and they charge you for the privilege. or it's easy and you get it for free.
That makes perfect sense.
Something's a little weird there. Zombie cookie wars are happening thanks to EverCookie, an open source JavaScript API developed by Sammy Kamkar. When implemented, it puts the information from the cookie in every place it can think of. So if you've heard of flash cookies, mm-hmm. which are hard to get rid of, it goes there. The RGB values of force cached pings,
wow.
PNG images, your web history.
On all those, browsers.
All those smattering of HTML5 storage features, all those HTML5 databases.
Yep.
Yeah. Cross browser.
It's un-
so
it,
unless
devious.
You delete every single one of them.
At the same moment.
It rebuilds itself.
That's what's really creepy about it. It's not even a zombie. It's like, do zombies regenerate?
No, it's like the Zerg.
Oh, I don't know Zerg. I was thinking more like a starfish. You know, like the crown of thorns?
Yeah.
He grows like, ooh, it's creepy. But the good news, this is not necessarily a corporation that's building this evil cookie to track your every move. This is just a proof of concept. That was done by, you know, he describes himself as a part-time security enthusiast. And he said, if I can do this in my spare time, think of what corporations can do with teams and with strong design. And I think it really does raise the issue of who's watching here? Who's watching the watchers?
He also pointed out that private browsing in Safari stops all EverCookie methods. So if you're using some of these private browsing situations, it might be pointing towards how you'd protect yourself from this in the future. But I love this. This is good research. It's a good way to get to the publicity out about it and get us ahead of the game so that we don't find out about it when some weird advertising agency are the one that perpetrate it upon us.
And this is not, and just to clarify, because you mentioned flash cookies, this is not that same story that we were talking about a couple months ago.
Right.
Where the big boys are just figuring out how to do it piece by piece. So
yeah.
It's hard to know what will unfold as hopefully security researchers like this start doing sort of reverse engineering on the cookies that
you
are
know,
out there.
Kamkar got a bunch of job offers.
Way to go, buddy. Nice resume builder.
You know, everybody likes to talk about how many apps they have in their store if they're Apple or how they have all the cool apps if they're Android. But apps do not appear to be helping companies sell more smartphones. A Deloitte survey says they surveyed 1,960 people between the ages of 14 and 75.
Whoa.
So wide ranging. In June and July of this year, 58% said size, quality, keyboard style, and price factor into their smartphone buying decisions. But 18% said that apps influence which smartphone they eventually decide to buy. So very few people really care about the apps.
Well, I agree and disagree. So let's start with the disagree. So I think that the existence of apps in general is helping a huge segment of the population migrate from standard you know, feature phones or straight up just basic dialers into the smartphone market. We're seeing that number grow hugely. The last big survey said that 1/3 of all American adults have smartphones. I bet the next time that we get those numbers out, it's going to be much more like a half or over the middle point. So I think that apps in general are getting people into smartphones. But once you actually have to make the decision between a smartphone, I think that really you're right, that people perceive, oh, it'll be there for whatever I need, except maybe BlackBerry. I don't think that people would perceive BlackBerry, like, I think they're interested in apps, and if they wanted apps, they wouldn't buy a BlackBerry phone.
Well, and that may be a problem for BlackBerry, although they have App World, so it is there. But 18% said, I don't really care about that. Is it because they all assume there are apps on all of these smartphones?
That's what I think it is.
Is that kind of what you're getting at?
I think it's very difficult for people to say, okay, I know that the iOS app store is probably twice as many titles as the Android marketplace, but the ones that I really want, they're probably all there.
So 18% of these people play Angry Birds. And we're like, I know what apps are available, and I want to get a smartphone that has Angry Birds on it. That is important to me. And then everybody else was just like, yeah, they all have apps, right? You know, they all got buttons.
It is gaming.
Is a button.
You're absolutely right that gaming is a huge influencer here. And in one of the articles that I was reading, they mentioned the Flurry Analytics study that said Apple's iOS gaming market share rose from 5% in 2008 to 19% in 2009. And at the same time, we're looking at the PSP going down to 11% from 20% in 2008, and then the DS really taking a decline. Well, I guess it wasn't terrible, but 75 to 70% in 2009. So I think we're going to see a major shift as people realize apps are games.
Yeah. And as games like Angry Birds is now available on all the platforms, it's not a big deal anymore, as it would have been in June and July when they were doing this survey. So as these apps that are popular do start to get available on multiple platforms, do you think we see this go away and people are like, yeah, it's apps are apps. I get them on whatever. Or do we see more special releases? You know, like when Halo Reach comes out, it's only on the Xbox, and everybody who doesn't have an Xbox is like, oh, I want to play Halo Reach, but I can't. Are we going to see that where it's like big game release, but it's only on Android, and everybody's like, oh, I got an iPhone. I really want to play that game.
That's a really good point. I don't know if that will happen within the next iteration of sort of that migration to smartphone. When we see total saturation of the smartphone market, I think that we'll start to see that because people will make decisions. But the more important question is, when you're flinging the bird out of the slingshot, do you just kind of the first couple times just wing it and see what happens, or are you really strategic and aim for weak points?
Well, you're always winging it.
Oh, you're a wing it man. Okay.
It's a bird. I think the more important question is, are these apps safe? And Veracode, an application security company, says half the time, no. They looked at 2,900 applications over an 18-month period that were used by their cloud-based customers and found 57% of all the apps were found to have an unacceptable application security quality. 8 out of 10 web apps failed to meet the Open Web Application Security Project.
Well, okay, wait. See, as a consumer, this is all very
confusing. We're not talking about phone apps anymore. We're talking about web apps.
Well, web apps I'd buy then. Okay. Now I can buy that. Because if it's phone apps, I wouldn't say, no way the numbers are like that.
But with so many enterprises starting to use web apps and cloud storage-based stuff, it's a big concern to figure out, like, okay, is this stuff secure? And cross-site scripting vulnerabilities, as Twitter experienced earlier this week, can really bite you fast.
Yeah. It's the good and the bad of all this diversification for enterprise.
The Motion Picture Association of America is in the news today.
You may have heard of them.
They're an industry advocacy group for the folks who bring us movies. And they somehow found their way into the world of ACTA, the Anti-Counterfeiting Trade Agreement, which, according to Cory Doctorow, wants to put a China-style censoring firewall in every country.
Super.
That is one possible implication of ACTA. What ACTA is really trying to do is put DMCA-like laws in every country and do it out of the spotlight. ACTA basically took up from where the World Intellectual Property Organization's negotiations fell off when public interest groups got that intellectual property treaty to be scuttled. They said, this is no good. We don't want it. The world doesn't want it. So WIPO said, okay, we're not gonna do this. And all the people who wanted it to happen said, fine, we're going to go negotiate in secret.
We're making our own new club.
Where nobody can tell us to stop. Well, people have caught on to it. Now the MPAA has got in on it, and they have said, look, I think you need to make sure that ACTA can allow you to block WikiLeaks.
Oh, yeah, that's what it's for.
You want to be able to go after anybody who's violating copyright, and WikiLeaks would be theoretically violating copyright because they put up copyrighted material on their leak site. So make sure you write ACTA so that you can block WikiLeaks, and make sure it just kind of vaguely says go after anything involving copyright, because we want to block the Pirate Bay.
I love this. This is like a dog pile on the flavor of the week thing that scares people. So if WikiLeaks is the new, you know, target number one for the government ticked about all of the information that's been shared, well, then let's just mention them and try and get them to be the bad guys. And you know how it is. What is it? The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Right.
And so if they can isolate that and associate them with P2P file shares, then of course that's going to really be good for America and everybody.
The actual, just so we get a little facts mixed in with our rhetoric here, an MPAA representative at the meeting apparently asked whether or not ACTA could be used to block access to damaging sites like WikiLeaks. So it wasn't them, you know, cackling like a grand vizier, as Cory Doctorow wrote. He's a good writer. But it was them saying, like, hey, could you use that to block sites? I don't know, like WikiLeaks? Pirate Bay? AT&T says they are innovating just too fast for everyone. That's the problem. That's the problem with all this net neutrality stuff. You can't even see us. We're just innovating. We're innovating over here. We're innovating over here. You can't touch us. Your net neutrality rate, they're just going to be obsolete. And honestly, that is pretty much what Randall Stephenson said. He said that, let me find this 12-month quote in here. I wish I would have pulled this out.
And it was like the Houston Daily.
Whatever regulation you put in, 12 months from now will look silly. This industry is changing so fast it will make new regulations look silly 5 years from now, I believe. Well, which is it?
Well, the sad thing is he does have a point. It is really tough to create regulation that fits with the pace of innovation. But I think AT&T perhaps not the person to call out the issues and make it all about them.
Yeah, because we're innovating so fast that we've got, like, you know, the same kind of wireless network that was in Europe 3 years ago. We got it now in the United States. We're innovating so fast. Our wire line is just like Japan had a decade ago. It's pretty fast. You can't keep up with this. We're moving. We're shaking. You're right. It is quite possible that you could write a really horrible law that would be obsolete in 12 months. But it's also very possible to make a regulation on principles that wouldn't be. And that is actually demonstrated quite well in the workings of the internet, which had its policies and principles developed in the 70s. There are problems with how they work. Granted, absolutely, there are problems with email and hypertext transport protocol.
Oh,
but,
really?
They actually still work.
Yeah.
And our policies for domain name registration were written back in the 90s. They need to be tweaked, but they work. It's very possible to write on principles that says, you know what? Don't have a law that says it's illegal to connect a legal device to the network. That can't become obsolete.
Right.
You can change what devices are legal or not to go with the technology. But you can write these principles so that they are narrow enough that and broad enough at the same time, narrow enough that they don't overreach, and broadly enough that they adapt with the times.
One example of that would be Cox Communications. New, we're telling you everything evil that we're doing.
Yeah, Cox Communications got in trouble for managing their network on peer-to-peer traffic, restricting peer-to-peer traffic. And the reason they got in trouble wasn't that they were doing it. It's that they didn't tell people that they were doing it. So now, here is Cox Communications Terms of Service. Network management may include, without limitation, the following actions. Rate limiting of email. Mm-hmm. Rejection or removal of spam or otherwise unsolicited bulk email. Port blocking. Cybersecurity mechanisms, including identification and blocking of viruses. Measuring subscriber bandwidth usage. Traffic prioritization and protocol filtering.
And port blocking.
Yeah. So we can block whatever ports we want. We can protocol filter till the cows come home. We can degrade your traffic, and we can prioritize it. It's all there. So sue us.
And now you know.
Now you can't sue us because we told you.
Yeah.
This also, I actually will be a nice fodder for the net neutrality advocates who say, who are constantly defending that, well, nothing bad has happened yet. Still nothing bad has happened here, but it's something they can point to.
Right. And I think at this point, it just becomes a market influencer. If you are an informed consumer, you will probably choose another provider.
Well, no,
in
you
areas
won't.
Where you don't have any choices, you are screwed.
Cox is a cable company, so you'll either only have Cox to choose from, or you'll have some slow-ass DSL.
Right. So you're either going to make an informed decision because you have a choice, or you're screwed.
Or you're screwed. All right.
Just so we made that clear.
Clear enough that we can move on to the news fuse.
Ba-boom.
Analyst Jeffrey Fittacaro with Susquehanna Financial Group said Wednesday that Apple is prepared to build 3 million CDMA iPhones in December, keeping the device on track for a 2011 launch. That would put total GSM and CDMA iPhone production for the quarter at between 21 and 22 million.
Mm-hmm. Google has revealed that aerial fiber links to its data center in Oregon were regularly shot down by hunters, forcing the company to put its cables underground. The search and advertising giant's network engineering manager, Vijay Gill, told the Osnog conference in Sydney last week that people were trying to hit insulators on electricity distribution poles, but regularly missed and hit the fiber instead.
That bet you can't hit that insulation. Oh, it took down the fiber.
I think the stop signs must already be so full
of
holes. Why bother?
Internet Explorer 9 is the bell of the browser beta ball. More than 2 million people downloaded the IE9 beta in the first 2 days after its release. Microsoft says its Beauty of the Web site has had more than 9 million visits and 26 million page views since IE9 beta launched on September 15th. And Microsoft's developer-oriented IE test drive site had 4 million page views during the same period.
We need some good... some good, bad Microsoft news here fast. It's just becoming too much of a love fest. All right, all you Canadian movie lovers, rejoice. Netflix is coming to the Great White North. No mailed-out discs, only a streaming service. It starts at $7.99 a month with a one-month free trial. We had some commentary in the chat room already that, the selection not so great. But what I say is, hey, hosers, go get you some Mad Men, hey?
It was kind of a Hawaiian pigeon, but it was the right words.
I don't know. I was working on it.
Rob H's Droid X is right now downloading a sizable update, possibly Froyo, so we'll keep you informed on that. Also, on stage at Oracle World, Michael Dell mentioned that Dell would be coming out with a new 7-inch Android tablet to go along with the Streak. Mike didn't give any other details, but it's likely this is the rumored Looking Glass tablet that was reported earlier this year.
Xerox is joining HP in producing printers capable of printing documents that are emailed to them. No drivers required. Xerox's offering requires a confirmation email and works with any device supporting the company's extensible interface platform. Bring me an app for that, please.
Microsoft Game Studios Vice President Phil Spencer said in a recent interview with IGN that the company plans to increase the frequency with which new Halo games hit the store shelves. Quote, they're like printing money. No, that's not what he said. He said, there's no explicit strategy that says we're to ship a Halo game every year, but I think one Halo game every 3 years was kind of our old cadence. It's probably not frequent enough. So you want more Halo, more good Halo, then maybe this will work. If they do it every year, it might be bad Halos.
Oh, bad Halo.
Nothing worse than bad Halo. Ugh. Bad Halo day.
Microsoft rolled out Bing Rewards Preview today. It's a loyalty program that offers users of the search engine credits that can be redeemed for free stuff. But, you know, nothing's really free. You have to install the Bing toolbar in Internet Explorer to take advantage of it, and they give you a card for your wallet and every time. No, that's a different loyalty program.
You have to swipe it in front of the screen. So you have to be using Windows. You have to be using Internet Explorer, and you have to be using the Bing toolbar.
Right. And you have to be shopping at Safeway.
That's all you have to do. And apparently it takes you like a year to get a calendar or something.
There are all these rebate programs, and I've never really gotten Ebates and all that kind of stuff. Some people swear by them. I know this is not exactly the same, but I'll just collect my box tops. Thank you.
Box tops. That's a good one. I used to do those.
Mm-hmm.
A Michael Jackson-themed MMO has been announced. SEE or C has announced plans to publish it. Planet Michael, as it will be called, is described as a massive social gaming experience with collaborative in-game activities set in an immersive virtual space themed after iconic visuals drawn from Michael's music, his life, and the global issues that concerned him.
All I can say is it finally all makes sense. Now I know why the Thriller Dance got pulled from Plants vs. Zombies.
Right, because they need to put it in the MMO.
That's what I'm saying.
Infringement.
It was now,
innocent or not.
Now I know. You're going to be playing this.
You know, I'm not playing the Star Trek MMO or the Lord of the Rings MMO right now because I don't have time. This is going to be a little lower down on my priority order than those.
Do you think this is a chick game? Because chicks love Michael. I love Michael.
It's going to be free to play, too. It's one of those, you know, we're going to make their money off in-game purchases of single gloves and, you know, red jackets. And
mm-hmm.
Wonder if Weird Al Yankovic will have a piece in this.
What did I hear you saying? He made a palindrome song?
Yeah, back in 2003. Sarah and I just discovered it upstairs.
Ooh, I got to go check that out.
Big Weird Al fans are like, that's like 7 years old.
Well, I'm out of it. I left it.
Except they would say that's like 7 years old in a palindrome, just to show off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
On to our calendar.
All right, the BlackBerry Developer Conference is next Monday in San Francisco. And what we think might come out, Tom, I know you're excited.
Oh, yeah, the Black Pad.
It sounds weird.
It just sounds wrong to say, but they have the URL. What else are they going to do with it?
Right, so this could be the tablet running RIM's operating system, and it's from Quanta, I think, was the manufacturer they were talking about, and it has some interesting things about it. 7-inch screen, possibly 2 cameras. Now, this is all rumored. I contacted BlackBerry, and they said, we do not comment on speculation and rumor, so they are not confirming this, but 7-inch screen, possibly 2 cameras, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth support. No cell data support, but tethers off of your BlackBerry device. Will it tether off of other devices that are creating their own hotspot? One would assume if it takes the Wi-Fi.
Yeah, BlackBerries are pretty good with the tethering.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure if this will be cool or just really sad.
It seems like it's really only good for BlackBerry users. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be the kind of thing that if you're a RIM fan and you like everything they do, you're probably going to be hot for it and you're going to buy it, but it's not going to be widely appealing.
So if the whole brand of the BlackBerry is the tactile keyboard. And mm-hmm. granted, they've had the Torch and the other thing with no keyboard. Do you think this will have a keyboard?
No, I don't think it'll have a keyboard. It's QNX, if you know that. That was an operating system, embedded operating system. We used to tout it as, you know, run an operating system on a floppy disk back in the screensavers days. So they have modified it. So it's not even the BlackBerry operating system.
Mm.
So it's a whole big departure for them. So physical keyboard, nah, they wouldn't need to. It's a whole different experience.
Little more BlackBerry news. The United Arab Emirates is still supposedly set to ban BlackBerry services on October 11th. No reported resolution of the security issues that have caused the government, who wants access to BlackBerry data for users, and they say that they have not reached an agreement with the Canadian company RIM. So that's October 11th is partial blackout, is my understanding of some services. And Thursday, September 23rd, the FCC is going to be voting on the reapportionment and reallocation of the white spaces. You know, this is a lot of good spectrum space, no?
Yep. We talked about this previously when this vote was first announced. So this is the vote, folks. If you're excited about the white space and the devices that might use it, you'll want to tune in to, C-SPAN? Would they cover that? I don't know where you...
All Janikowski all the time?
FCC.gov? Yeah, keep reloading. F11. Oh, wait, not F11. F5.
F5.
Yeah.
F5.
F11 will just make it big. Which you might want to.
F5. Finally, for those of you who've been around the tech space for many a year, Comdex. It's back. Bum, bum, bum.
It's not. What? What are you talking about? It's back.
November 16th and 17th, there will be a virtual Comdex. If you go to comdexvirtual.com.
Oh, so it's not really back.
If you're watching this show as opposed to listening...
That's so 1999.
Let me explain what we're looking at.
It's they can knock right where they left off.
It is a virtual representation of what looks like the drop-off area at the Las Vegas Convention Center. It has flags. They even included, Eric pointed out, the Las Vegas sign. There's somebody talking at us from a marquee telling us that there'll be a virtual exhibit hall. There will be keynote speakers. There will be, it's channel only, channel retailers.
This is channel.
Virtual,
baby. If
you're
into channel, I'm sure you'll be very excited about it.
Comdex, all I can say is it was great in 98.
Wow, looking at that, I just expect like, Sumi Das to come walking out with a ZDTV mic flag.
And I want to see the virtual booth babes.
Yeah, we're going to get some virtual No. You're not going to have any virtual after parties either.
Nope.
On to the email, tnt@twit.tv. Hey, Tom, et al.
I'm Al.
My name's Becky. Your discussion of teaching and social network use piqued my interest. I've been podcasting my lectures here at Algoma University, go Thunderbirds, for 4.25 years now. I also use Facebook, Twitter, and IM to communicate with my students. Indeed, I play Xbox Live with many of them.
That's awesome.
While some of my colleagues have said that they would never use these tools as they would be concerned about students learning too much about them, I relish the interaction with my students. Indeed, they know when I am at the bar. Heck, the bar is in the school. The drinking age in Ontario is 19. Now, I realize that this is different than an elementary school teacher or a high school teacher, as I'm teaching adults. That said, my students' marks have increased by 6.6 points since I started podcasting and using social media in the class. There's a guy in town that teaches grade 4, and he uses social media and other tools. He has the kids interact with children's book authors in class over Skype. He does not follow the kids on social media sites, but encourages their parents to follow him. Finally, yeah, I see all of the pictures of my students' escapades, but they also see pictures of my misspent youth posted on my old high school buddies. Then again, they get the stories of my misspent youth in class anyway, especially in neuropharmacology class. Okay, I'm rambling, and in the words of Homer Simpson, can't talk now, Flanders. I have to a class to teach. Dave the psychologist.
Before responding to that, which I thought was epic, I want to read the counterpoint. We got tons of email and voicemail about this, including one person whose voicemail said, we created a fan page for our class, and that's how our teachers basically represent themselves through fan pages and not linking directly to
the profile. Lots of different perspectives on this.
And Matt, a teacher from Ashwaubenon, Washington, is that right, Tom?
Ashwaubenon,
Wisconsin, says, hey, Tom and crew, I'm an avid listener since day one. Love the show. Thank you. I'm also a teacher who dropped his Facebook account after I received complaints from parents that I would not friend them. I try very hard to keep my personal and professional lives separate while still incorporating both technology and social networking into the classroom. I have a separate Twitter account, which I use for homework and announcements, and a deluxe website geared both towards students and parents. While I deeply care for the students in my classroom and school building, I just don't see the educational value of having a Facebook account friended by students and parents.
So this is the other side of the coin, and this seemed to be pretty representative of most of the feedback that we got, which is folks saying, yeah, I use a little social media, but I limit it, and it's public, or it's controlled, or it's monitored, and I don't friend people directly with my own personal account that has my own personal information.
And one person said, I'm really careful. I have one list of people who get my status updates and one who don't. And then I kind of felt like that's where Facebook really gets problematic, is staying on top of those privacy settings and aware of which lists are my life is too complicated. I'm Twitter for professional and I'm Facebook for personal. And a few colleagues I share with personally on Facebook, but they have to be people that I know really well.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching the show. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. We didn't get to any phone voicemails today, but you can call us 260-TNT-SHOW or email us a video of yourself. Just upload it to YouTube or Vimeo or one of those kind of sites and send us the link to tnt@twit.tv. And, of course, you can find all the shows and links to the show notes at twit.tv/TNT. We'll see you tomorrow.
Bye.